I'm Molly Wood, and welcome to The Source Code. This is the place where we like to give you the uncut, full-length versions of the interviews we air on Marketplace Tech that we think are especially noteworthy, and that we think you, dear listener, will be extra interested in. In this case, that person is Mignon Clyburn. She's stepping down from the Federal Communications Commission after 9 years. I talked with her for a while about partisanship at the FCC, the policies she's put in place and seen reversed, and her plans for the future. Here's Mignon Clyburn, The Source Code. So I think I have to ask what we're all wondering, which is, why leave now?
Well, I believe it's time. And I also believe that I can be more effective on the outside. You know that for the past 15 or so months, I've been on the other side of the winning debate when it comes to just reasonable and fair rates for inmates and their families, when it comes to looking out for those individuals who cannot afford a dial tone with the Lifeline program that would also have enabled them to have broadband affordably. And so I just found that this was the time and it was the place for me to leave and to be an advocate, a more an effective advocate on the outside versus at the FCC.
That feels like it starts to answer my next question, which is that, you know, during your tenure at the FCC, you are known as such a fierce advocate for consumers, for the Lifeline program, like you said, for lowering prison phone rates, for net neutrality, for really consumer protections. Do you feel like the work that you did or some of the work you did, including briefly as the first woman to chair the commission, is being undone?
Well, a lot of the things that we put forth that were hard fought, hard sought after, they have been reversed. But I am uplifted because there are a number of states, number of attorneys general who have said, look, the FCC, we believe you are on the wrong side of history, that you are not doing what it takes to protect the privacy of individuals in this nation, to provide broadband-enabled services in a way in which it's a legally sustainable framework. We believe that you've got it wrong. So you notice 23 attorneys general have weighed in and said, we're going to sue the FCC because the repeal of net neutrality. You've got two states that pass their own net neutrality rules because they recognize that their individuals, those constituents back home, they want and deserve protections. They want privacy protections. They want to be able to access the internet in a way that is free and open and unimpaired. The way it's set up now, there is no cop on the beat that will stand in the way or stand for those individuals who deserve protections. There's no one that is blocking anyone from treating you unfairly when it comes to your access online. And so those states said the FCC is punting and won't do anything about it, then we will. And so while I am disappointed that the FCC has reversed course and moved in another direction, I am uplifted that those lawmakers in those states, that those attorneys general recognize that but for a broadband connection, their communities and the individuals in those communities would not have the tools needed to thrive in the 21st century, and they're fighting for their right to thrive and survive.
Is some of what's happening and some of this sort of abrupt reversal partly a factor of the way that the FCC is set up as what is essentially or kind of unavoidably a partisan body because you get a majority of commissioners? Or has that partisanship sort of crept in during your tenure?
Well, it's interesting the way you phrase the question, because I think I have to answer yes to all of the above. Number one, the chair is chosen by the president of the United States. That's who names the chair of the FCC. And so there are five members of the FCC, and there's always a 3-2 balance. So you are going to have policies that reflect the tenor and the objectives of whoever is in the White House. That's number one. Number two, I think the country realizes whether it embraces it or not, that we have naturally become more partisan. And I find that unfortunate because what happens is these entities, agencies are becoming more and more hardwired to the fact that if I disagree with one or two things in an item, then I vote against the entire item. That is not productive. Mm-hmm. I always start at the 50-yard line. I always try to seek compromise. And I don't look for perfection. I just look for advancement. But what we are finding increasingly is that it's an all-or-nothing approach to regulation, and we all lose when it's all-or-nothing.
Do you wish during your tenure that there had been times, it's not necessarily going to have been less partisan, but do you wish that there had been times when Congress had stepped in to formalize some of these things like net neutrality or the Lifeline program so that they wouldn't necessarily be subject to the change in leadership?
Well, I will say that Congress stepped in last year when it came to the Congressional Review Act, when we passed privacy protections, if you remember. They stepped in, I believe it was 2016 when they stepped in mm-hmm. and overturned that. So they have stepped in when they thought, when they disagreed, when the majority disagreed with the course that we took. Now, I find it curious in the recent debates with a certain social media a provider, then all of a sudden you hear talk about, the need for protections. But nevertheless, Congress did step in. If you take note, there are 50 votes in the Senate to do this again. When it comes to our net neutrality rules, there are 50 votes in the Senate that disagreed with the reverse course when it comes to a net neutrality a repeal. And so I think you're hearing from the people, from the lawmakers, from the citizens, from Congress, that they're dissatisfied, at least on one track when it comes to net neutrality. And yes, I believe that clarity can be given, particularly when it comes to what is happening in this egregious regime for inmates and their family when it comes to paying these incredibly high prices for a service to call a loved one. And so I believe clarity needs to be given to the FCC because it is failing to act. And so Congress, when there's a failure to act or when they believe that we're out of sync with the American public, I think they have an opportunity to weigh in. They have weighed in. They will weigh in. And hopefully that will put us back on the right side of history.
Because I guess the question becomes, I mean, certainly the FCC has a pretty broad purview, but the question of the internet, you know, and this mode of communication and this sort of heartbeat of our economy, it's sort of like, is this 5-person commission enough? Does it even make sense for the FCC to be in this situation at all?
Well, I say it makes sense from a regulatory point of view, because this is an agency, an 80-plus-year-old agency, that is responsible for our communications ecosystem when it comes to international and interstate commerce. And so, you know, when you talk about the commerce here being defined as communications, it makes absolute sense that the expert agency when it comes to telecommunications is at the forefront when it comes to rules and regulations to the open internet to net neutrality when it comes to these principles. So yes, that makes sense. But we're in an ecosystem that deserves checks and balances. And so, so 5 members alone in a vacuum should not decisions, you know, be made. Unchecked? No. But one of the things that was interesting to your question is the fact that we had millions of commenters to weigh in. The majority of those legitimate comments were in favor of retaining the 2015 net neutrality rules. But the majority did not vote with them. They made it very clear that they were only going to listen to those comments that were had a legal underpinning, these long but opinions that they were going to listen to. They weren't going to listen to, that mother in South Dakota who said that they have their own business and they want an open platform without someone getting in the way or blocking or throttling, slowing down their traffic in order to have commerce be a part of their entrepreneurial pursuits. They didn't listen, to that school child who wants to be able to navigate different sites that might be a competitor to their internet service provider in order to further their education. They didn't listen to those individuals. They only listened to those large corporations. And the large corporations, those internet service providers, did not want net neutrality rules in place. And we don't have net neutrality rules in place. They did not listen to the will and the voices of the individuals. They only listened to those large providers who only answer to shareholders and their bottom lines, not to the needs, the healthcare needs, the educational needs, the access to government services, those people. They didn't listen to the will of the people, and that is a shame.
It seems like I have been on this beat since Julius Genachowski, and it seems like for a long time the FCC sort of tried to stay out of taking this really strong stance around net neutrality. Obviously, Genachowski sort of declined to reclassify the internet. And then Tom Wheeler, I think, tried to stay out of it, was my sense, until the Obama administration, you know, some people argue, forced his hand. What do you say to people who believe the FCC as an agency overstepped its boundaries by trying to take such a firm hand with that regulatory framework?
I will say that the previous decisions, as you know, were overturned in court. And so the FCC, it was necessary for the FCC to come up with a legally sustainable framework to uphold our net neutrality principles. And that came with Title II, which was a stronger, I will admit, a regulatory framework. It took all of the best principles of protections when it came to your legacy or telephone framework, but it stripped away over 700 rules and regulations that were a part of the old framework, but it gave you and left the protections that will allow for the protections and the obligations that internet service provider had. It was upheld by the district court, and now we're going back to the days where we're reverse coursing here, and now we're in a legally unsustainable, uncertain framework. What we did in 2015 was upheld in court. What we did last December has a great chance of being overturned in court because, again, it's not based on a legally sustainable framework. And the uncertainty does not help business, does not help consumers. It doesn't help when it comes to innovation, advancement, and opportunities in the telecommunications space.
Do you believe that the 2015 action, it was upheld in court, do you believe that it was necessary?
I absolutely believed it was necessary. It provided certainty. It provided the opportunity for those businesses to invest and thrive. Certainty is our friend when it comes to innovation, investment, and our opportunities. It allows for those protections that you would control that information, that critical information, that private information that you share with your internet service provider. As it stands now, because of the December rules and because of what Congress did back in 2016, there is no protection as when it comes to your personally identifiable information that you share with your internet service provider. There's no one there to protect you. So the 2015 rules were there. They were painstakingly crafted to provide the type of balance needed to protect consumers and to enable opportunities in investment and innovation. We no longer have that balance. And I think we're going to pay a terribly high price going forward.
All right, let's move off of net neutrality for a minute, because obviously, like we said, the FCC has a much broader purview. What's other work that you were really proud of?
Well, the one thing that I was uplifted about that is in an uncertain place right now is that we started reforming the Lifeline program. And those of you who are unfamiliar with our Lifeline program is one of four universal service constructs that we have at the FCC that recognizes that there are millions, tens of millions of individuals who cannot afford a dial tone. There are even more individuals who cannot afford broadband services. And so what we did was reform that 30-plus-year-old program to not only make it applicable to voice service, but to broadband service. But what the FCC, the majority, has proposed in the last few months is basically ignoring all of the reforms that we put in place. And it is erecting higher hurdles that would enable all of these affordability opportunities for those on the wrong side of the economic and digital divide to take place. And so I was proud of what we were on the cusp of doing. I am not so proud of what the majority is on the verge of doing. I was proud that the FCC finally, after over 10 years of ignoring the plaintiffs, that we finally said we're going to seek and put rules in place to provide just, reasonable, and fair rates to those incarcerated and their families when it comes to keeping in touch, when it comes to the rates that they pay when they call their families who are incarcerated. But what did the current FCC framework or the majority did? They didn't even follow what the court laid out would be the next series of steps to move to a reform when it comes to rates that just reasonable, seeking just reasonable rates for inmates and their family. So now we're stuck. Families have nowhere to go. Those who pay these egregiously high rates inside of their states for intrastate rates are seeing no promise of reform. And again, you've got an FCC that has the capacity to make a difference. The market is broken. We usually come and act when a market is broken. But it seems like when there are people who are economically challenged, when there are places where people are not as politically well-heeled, that we don't seem to hear their voices as much. And so when it comes to inmates and their families, when it comes to, people who can't afford a dial tone or broadband services, it seems like the current majority is not listening to them. They seem to be listening only to those providers who can afford the big law firms that can afford, to be in front of us all the time. And the will of the people, those millions of people who could benefit from the innovation and investment that we're seeing all over the world. Right here at home, we're creating digital canyons with no end in sight.
I feel like I really hear you saying that no compromise is possible. Like, I feel like, there's always been the sense that it's one thing for Congress to fight. It's one thing for presidents to make bombastic or partisan statements, but that behind the scenes, the wonks, like the trustworthy policy wonks at the FCC, were going to find a way to get along and find a way to be reasonable and dig into the legalese together. And it sounds to me like you're really saying that you feel that work cannot be done.
Well, I will never say never when it comes to the prospect of closing digital and opportunities divides. I will never say never. I will say this, that I don't think, as it stands right now, that we're achieving the proper balance. And if you were to look at the Telecommunications Act and what it demands of us, meaning demands of the FCC, it says very clearly that we're supposed to conduct ourselves in a non-discriminatory way to enable and ensure that there are reasonable rates, that there is a reasonable access to advanced communication services. And today, in the 21st century, that means broadband. And if we are unwilling to do what it takes to compromise, to look at the entire ecosystem, to not just look at what's going on in rich communities, but into looking at those economically challenged communities, then we're going to, those divides are going to get wider. And we're not really going to be living up to our mission of providing opportunities on a non-discriminatory basis to places and to individuals in rural communities, regardless of race, regardless of income, regardless of where they find themselves here. So I know it seems like I am sounding less than optimistic, and maybe I am a bit, but I am still hopeful that the voices of those in these communities that know that they are, if they are connected They have opportunities to engage in telemedicine opportunities. The kids could do their homework if they're connected at home. Because let's face it, you cannot do your homework if you're a mobile-only consumer. You cannot fill out an application online successfully if you're a mobile-only consumer. And looking at whether you have a connectivity at home, which 1 in 5 African-Americans and Latinos do not have broadband, either mobile or fixed, you're looking at individuals, if they make under $30,000 a year, you're looking at individuals who mm-hmm. could benefit the most from being connected, not having the opportunity to do so. And so we have the opportunity at the FCC to be an enabler of opportunities or a stifler of opportunities. And if we don't look at these communities that need help the most, if we don't ensure that there are investments and affordable opportunities in those big cities where people might not be able to afford some of the basics, and those small towns and rural communities where the infrastructure is not being built, if we don't target expressly target our investment and our regulatory attention there, then these gaps will continue to widen. And people who need broadband connectivity the most will never, ever get it.
What can you tell us about what you might do next, where you think you could make more impact?
Well, one of the great things about being able to transition and not turning off my passion hat is the fact that I believe that I will be a more effective advocate and communicator on the outside of the FCC, where the political balance matters less. You know, this agency that I've had the opportunity to serve over 8 years does a lot of remarkable things, as you mentioned. The things that seem obvious, managing telephone numbers, to protecting, or in this case, overturning net neutrality. But I think Congress did a pretty good job when it laid out its vision for the agency. It said in Section 1 of the Act that the FCC is to make available so far as possible to all people of the United States without discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex, a rapid, efficient, nationwide and worldwide wire and radio communication service with adequate facilities at reasonable charges. Now, right now, I don't feel that we're living up to that full potential. But I am positive that once I leave the FCC in the coming days or weeks, that I will continue to be a voice for opportunities, a voice for those who don't get listened to, a voice for bridging digital and opportunities divides, a voice, maybe not a vote, but a voice for those who are not being heard. And I'm looking forward to that day. And even though sometimes it's a bit bittersweet on one end because change is often difficult, because my passion is still intact, because my interests are still the same, I'm looking forward to working with those on the outside to push the FCC on the inside to do what Section 1 dictates it to do, to serve all people and to ensure that we all have opportunities.
It seems like a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are sort of giving up on government as the instrument of their changes, whatever the whatever they want those changes to be. And so I wonder if you're going that route or if you have any plans to also run for public office.
I will never give up on government. I will never give up on public servants. I will never give up on the promise that we have to fill in those gaps, to be that substitute for competition where it doesn't exist, to be the protector of those of individuals who cannot fight by themselves. I will never give up on that. When it comes to elective office, I have no plans in the foreseeable future to take that route. But I am proudly a public servant at heart. I grew up in a family that public service is a part of their DNA. I don't plan to rewire myself. I plan to maintain that activism. It will come in a different form and fashion, but I plan to still be a voice for those who need it the most. That's who I am, and I'm proud of who I am.
What advice do you have for your successor? A Democratic commissioner is going to fill your spot, and as you have, you know, told us in so many ways, it's a hard job. What would you tell that person?
It's a difficult job, but it's the most rewarding opportunity that I've had to date. And my advice to my successor is be your authentic self. Those experiences that I had as a state commissioner, that I had as an owner and operator of a weekly newspaper, it allowed me to engage with individuals, to hear what their issues and problems, were, to really get to know and see and hear what is working and what is not, who's being heard and who's not. All of those experiences help guide me as a policymaker over the last eight plus years. So everyone's experiences, they differ, but they're applicable to what comes next when it comes to this particular post. So be your authentic self. Listen to those particularly who are most in need. Make sure that every decision that you make has them in mind. Again, we have the opportunity to be an enabler of opportunities. I think we should embrace that, do everything we can with every decision to enhance that. And those things that would get in the way, we should do everything in our power to get rid of.
That is outgoing FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn. Thank you so much for the time today.
It has been my pleasure.